Welcome back, everyone. I'd like to introduce Dr. Rob Johnson. Sir, if you're there, could you turn your camera on? That's fantastic.
Great. I'm sorry you can't see me, but at least you can see a slide, I hope. That's the really important thing. So I'm Tom. I don't know if you want to say anything about me. I hope you don't want to say too much, but I'm ready to go by the look of it.
All I wanted to say is Dr. Rob Johnson is the first director of the Secretary of State's Office for Net Assessment and Challenge in the Ministry of Defence. I don't think I want to go on anymore.
No, that's a good idea.
There's more details in the contributor biographies in the programme. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Steve. Well, sorry about the kerfuffle that was just there a moment ago, but we're now in action. So first thing, I just want to say what an honour it is to be on this lineup. You know, wargaming, without a shadow of doubt, is absolutely integral to the work of the UK Office of Assessment. And also, you know, to those of you who are professionals, you'll know very well that we've been engaging people since we stood up the organisation as much as we can. We want to do a lot more. It's so valuable. I cannot tell you enough about how important it is. And of course, today you'll have heard from industry about advancing wargaming and indeed your part in it. Tomorrow you heard about we're doing the games fair, the types of games and methods. And you'll hear from professionals, how they go about doing it, how they use methods and so on. But specifically, what I want to do is help you, this is about you and how you develop that experience to become a professional. And I think like any professional, the word profession suggests a period of training, of developmental experience, of course. If you want to develop, you know, the idea is that you take stock, you reflect on your own performance, and you are determined to improve to the very highest standard. But I think it's also about outlook. I think it's a state of mind. It's often been said that experts are not taught. They teach themselves. So how can you go about and teach yourself? Well, let's just try this for a moment as an opening. Many people who come from a background in wargaming before they become professionals have perhaps been exposed to the hobby side of what goes on in wargaming, or indeed they perhaps come from a military defence or security background where operations, the delivery of effects, if you like, is the most important thing that they do. And there's a very, very good guide produced by the Ministry of Defence on the value of wargaming. And in the opening vignette of that book, it shows an example of how wargaming can really help professionals. It shows the needs that Britain had in about 1912 to think about how it would deploy an expeditionary force of land forces from the United Kingdom to France, and how would that be conducted. A war game was carried out. From that war game, the vignette tells us that the number of ships that was required was ascertained. It's clearly they weren't enough, and they needed more. And it showed how you could successfully use wargaming to reveal gaps in your operational capability. The paradox, of course, of that opening vignette of that book is that it led to a strategic failure. It was a departure to send a small expeditionary force into the path of four German armies, which were very well prepared for a land war, a continental war in Europe. Britain was not. And I think the departure from British traditional strategy, which was to be expeditionary around the world, to nibble away at the peripheries and to interdict supply chains and to crush the economic power of his adversaries using both finance and economics and maritime power, was lost. And I think one of the things that comes out of this vignette is that if you're a true professional, you will consider the very structure and the value and the purpose of wargaming, especially, I think, at the strategic level. In simple terms, don't forget to look at the big picture. Operational wargames are very interesting. They're the most exciting. and they're the most engaging for a variety of reasons. But they are, sometimes there's a danger that we can miss that bigger picture. And I think the professional will have a wider aperture. Now, I don't want to get into the debate about, you know, what's wargaming and what's simulation. I'm sure you've had some of that today, and if you haven't, you will tomorrow. What I think simulators and wargamers share is the sense that wargaming is not entertainment. It is a professional device of analysis. And what we'll do briefly in this presentation is I'll examine just a couple of areas for professionals. One is about strategy and decision, because I think what wargamers do is help people make decisions. And I think the second area we'll touch on is this analytical, scientific, and educational aspect, because I think the aiming mark for you as a professional in your journey is to have some sense of, you know, what is it that I need to be thinking about? What do I need to be doing to make me fully professional? So let's move on. And I'm going to be very brief about this. Sir Hugh Strawn, a British military historian a few years ago now, said that strategy as a word had lost its meaning, and that this is a bit of a problem for all of us. It had been applied to everything, you know, strategy for tackling drugs or war on hunger, strategy against hunger and so on. And it made me go back to the original, to the Greeks, who said that strategos is the art of a general, and that there are actually at least nine major definitions of what a strategy is, which is really, really unhelpful when you're trying to, you know, kind of design a war game, a strategic game, for example. So the main ones you can see on the screen in front of you, campaigning to bring about a decisive battle, impose a settlement, that's Clausewitz. The various levers of national power, you hear that a lot, that's quite traditional. Arthur Leakey's and Antonio Chavarria's idea that it's about ends, ways and means and risks. The late Colin Gray talked about a bridge between a political decision and operations. Sir Lawrence Friedman has talked about creating power. That's what strategy is all about, utilizing power. Hugh Strawn himself said it's a dialogue between civil and military leaders. And lots of other people said, well, it's about plans. Now, the problem there is that it's all very confusing. You know, what are we talking about? Well, let's strip it right back. I would argue that it's about making decisions and executing decisions for subsequently the adroit allocation of resources in order to fulfill your goals. But the decision part is a really important part. This is why wargaming is so integral to what we do. And if you don't believe me, if you think I'm talking nonsense here, have a go at replacing the word strategy every time you come across it. Cross it out and put the word decision in there instead and see what you get. Because strategos becomes the art of making decisions. Campaigning, you know, the search for a decisive battle, a battle of decision, is about making decisions in such a way that you bring your enemy to a point that, you know, you're forcing him essentially or her to make a decision. And the levers of power, again, are all about you're making a decision to use those levers of power. The process is about decision-making process. It's about the fulfillment of a decision. The bridge, how do you get from policy to operations? You have to decide, and so on. I won't labour the point anymore. But, you know, I do think that what we are doing in part is preparing people to make better decisions. And have, you know, a good way of doing that is to give them experience. And the way to do that, of course, is through wargaming. But it has to be done carefully. Strategy is, like wargaming, a practice. It's not just a theory. Theory can take you so far, but you have to start applying it. So strategy is executed in some sort of conflicted environment, just like a war game, and they are trying to make decisions and execute their own strategy. And your job is to try to get ahead of those decisions and make better decisions and compel them to make a choice in the end, to deny them perhaps, or deter them, or if necessary, destroy them, to make them make decisions that you can live with. And it's played out through communications and through networks and the ownership of networks, through the passage of information, the flow of information, the passage of resources, and so on. And therefore, as long as you can stay on your general course, you know, moving out of the way of obstacles, changing with the tides and the flow of events, you can and still emerge at your intended destination. Effectively, you have become a strategist, if you can think in that way. So let me see if I can get this to move on. There we go. The late Sir Michael Howard, an experienced military officer and historian, concluded that there was no operational level, that we'd all been a bit misled. And he said that strategic decisions are played out within what he called an operational dimension. I've diagrammatically represented that on the screen as like a box in which higher decisions are made downwards onto that or into that operational dimension. And tactical actions and decisions will play back, will be like a negative or positive feedback loop to the big decision makers. And again, wargaming done professionally reveals just that. The so what is that professional wargaming forces us to consider the framing of military strategy, of defense and security issues, and of military strategy's implementation. It forces us to frame it in a particular way. Now, lots of people are probably thinking at this stage, ah, yes, Rob, but what about grand strategy? Can wargamers play a part in something as grand strategy? The answer is yes. Yes, you can. Grand strategy consists of, you know, enduring conditions, enduring interests, and enduring practices, sometimes referred in shorthand to strategic culture. And of those, you can see on screen, there are some sort of subheadings that you might want to take a look at that. But crucially, there are probably really just four major strategic ways at grand strategy level, either to stabilize a situation, to rebalance a situation or a condition or an interest, to expand, this is effectively what Vladimirovich Putin is trying to do, or combination, which is a sort of an alliance pact to try and to prevent others from achieving their aims. And what I think the so what here is that professional wargamers look at the full range of techniques and ways within the framework, and they can refer upwards into a grand strategy to draw on that experience to understand different ways being used at a much, much lower level. And equally, it can work back up the other way too, from the tactical back up through the operational dimension to the strategic. Now, what I'm going to do next is I'm going to reveal to you something that isn't yet published, right? So here it is. This is the big thing. Drum roll. Effectively, it is. I've tried to map over 2,000 years worth of military history and strategic history. What were the strategic ways that were imposed, and what was the sort of central objective of those strategic ways? So right in the middle of the diagram, you can see on the screen in front of you, it says compel choice, deny and deter. I haven't put the word destroy in there because I'm a bit squeamish. But ultimately, you know, those are the objectives that we're trying to achieve. And there are some direct military ways, which wargamers will be very familiar with, you know, fusion, decapitation, escalation. You put more pressure on your opponent, you soften them up. You debilitate their command and control. You impose a range of measures to make them do certain things. But there are also, through our strategic histories, lots of indirect and protracted ways of achieving the same objective. Now, not quite as exciting, especially if they're indirect and successive, not quite as, you know, dramatic and entertaining like a sort of tabletop wargamer would be in the hobby side, but actually really important from the wargamers, particularly the strategic wargamers' point of view. The unfortunate aspect of wargaming in its history was to really privilege action of certain types, mainly operational actions. And the point I'm making to you is that 2,000 years worth of history of strategy indicates there are lots of other ways of achieving your strategic objectives without having to go only for the escalation or annihilation kind of option. Lots of things we can use in that regard. And let me just share with you just one to explain the list that you've got in front of you. The word reflection, spelt with an X. Reflection with an X is drawing on your opponent's propensities to draw them into a trap, into a mistake, into an error. Now, those of you who are wargamers will know, you can sometimes set up a sort of feint, a false front to draw your opponent into making a mistake. And then, of course, you capitalize on it at the operational level. This one also plays into the strategic level. So let me conclude this section about the strategy bit by just saying, look, in the end, war games are ultimately about decisions and the resulting actions. And what we're doing in thinking about decisions as the main sort of fulcrum, the Schwerpunkt perhaps, of what we're doing, is that we're replicating both decisions and actions. And professional war gamers are very, very interested in measuring that replication, that decision, that action. They like to assess analytically what it is that's going on so that we can pass that information on to those who have to make their decisions. There is just, however, one small problem with the way that we do business, and that is humans. The central actor in wargaming, professional or otherwise, is the human. And on the right-hand side of this slide, you can see some of the problems we have, you know, groupthink, everyone just following along, somebody not listening and not being a particularly good team player, the possibility that, you know, there's too much consensus, that's why we're having a group hug there. You've got the arrogant, know-it-all, complacent civil servant who says, "Ah, oh, well, young man, we have all this in hand." Or you've got the kind of deliberately argumentative types. Now, we've all seen them in wargaming. It's a problem. The great thing about wargaming is more of a collegiate, you know, body of band of brothers and sisters than it is like this. But we've got to just bear in mind that, you know, theory can only take you so far, as I say. It allows us, theory, to compare different circumstances and individuals. But the human factor, as Thucydides would have said, the human factor will always impose itself upon what we're doing. All leaders have flaws because, quote, they're only human, end quote. But this is the root. If we follow, we have a look at these human dimensions, it's a route for us as professional wargamers to help them and to help us to build experience. So Ulysses S. Grant, whose you know, his photograph appears in the far left of the screen there, you know, was a successful strategist, but at a terrible cost. And had a lot of very, very human flaws, which I shall be pleased to tell you about sometime if you're that interested. Right. So analytical aspects then of wargaming. This is sort of the main business, the main bread and butter of what we're doing here. We are not just interested in operations and tactics. We are looking at strategic considerations about decisions to commit force, about procurement, which, of course, costs the taxpayers a lot of money. It's about the technological big bets we might go in for. Do we invest in the next generation hypersonics or do we build more tanks? These are really critical issues. And wargaming is central at the professional level to help us understand how we're going to balance and to choose, make a decision ultimately about these things. Now, there are some very, very powerful tools out there in professional wargaming. One of my favorites happens to be Matrix Games. And I know there are people here, Tom Mowat, who very kindly introduced me, is a specialist on this. He's absolutely a very, very powerful tool indeed. Very easy to mount quite quickly and to deliver really powerful lessons and analysis from it. More elaborate Matrix games, of course, take longer to set up, but they are there. The reason why we sometimes have to go things for a bit more rapid than we'd really like is because senior leaders who we're often appealing to, yes, they're very important, but they have very limited time. And we have to make sure that what we are delivering is delivering maximum effect to the minimal possible time. It has to be deeply efficient in that regard. Now, the approach you might take, I mean, here's just an idea. I mean, you know, most, there'll be some differences, I think, in the way the different professionals approach this, but most of us would agree there has to be a research design, there has to be some sort of purpose and a design, analytical design behind it. Then we might create a set of hypotheses. We might look at options for how we frame that particular war game. And then the analytical framing part, you know, we might decide on a certain type of game. I've just written the word matrix here. There might be a structured discussion form of game. It might be a TTX, a tabletop exercise. We will then, having delivered some of the planning there, we framed it, we will then look at what is the data that we need to use, or are the data, sorry, that we need to use, and what's the literature already say, what existing work has been done in this particular area. So there may have already been a sequence of war games over many years that we can draw on at this point. But we will need to select the analytical method, and that says in the green box, we actually conduct the war game or the simulation. And at the same time, we're carrying out the analysis and testing the results before we're looking for validation, peer review, to just check what we've done. And like a good scientist, we will often retest under lab conditions and adjust over time what it is that we've concluded. All this will be obvious to all of you, I'm sure. But it's the, let me just move that slide on. Here we go. So the analytical advantages, I think, and what professional wargamers really help us with is that we end up with very valuable explanatory models of human behaviors, in this case, decision-making. We've got the opportunities for fantastic creative solutions that come out of wargames that are often overlooked in policy formulation or in anodyne strategy documents and so on. Wargaming can expose gaps, opportunities. It can reveal complexity, or indeed cut through complexity in a sort of Gordian knot chopping style, and it can help us understand how we make better use of time. There's lots of other social scientific issues that we can get after, our analytical issues, you know, causation factors, pathways, dependency pathways, the importance of certain variables or drivers or thresholds. And then we can make use of social statistical methods, which are very helpful. We'll go through those. We can improve our design, and we can look at how we actually use statistics to help us derive, you know, better decision-making through minimum or maximized expected utility, which is the sort of basically the theory of it. So we end up with analytical questions. The analysis bit is in dark gray boxes. This is what the game designers will be looking at, series of questions, critical questions, whereas the wargamers themselves will be looking at the line of light gray boxes at the bottom. And it's the observation onto and into what the decision makers are doing, which makes us the professionals that we are. There's a great history behind this. I won't go through lots of this now because I want to be as brief as possible to maximize Q&A at the end of the long day. But bear in mind that there have been some problems in the past. Poor old Major Livermore, when he designed his games in 1879, became overwhelmed by the sheer volume of data. And the operational research or operational assessment tools are much more pared down just to deliver that which is the most efficient and necessary. And it still helps us reveal some of the black swan events and some of the big unexpected events. But we can't at the moment, you know, taking a purely human approach wouldn't give us all the answers. Fortunately, we now live in an era of scientific approaches to professional wargaming. And all this has come really from the 1960s onwards. It's really developed since then. My equivalent, now sadly he's passed away, but Andrew Marshall, who was the Office of Net Assessment Director in the United States, was one of the first people to seize upon hobby wargaming and develop into a professional method and have it digitized, if you like, as a strategic assessment system. It's still in action today. The National Defense University in the US still use this particular approach. What went wrong prior to that, however, was Robert McNamara during the Vietnam War and his WizKids, who thought that everything could be reduced only to statistics. And that's where things went wrong. My first bullet point there you'll see on the screen is the real value is blending the human decision-making process with whatever the simulators can best offer to free up the wargame participants from the burden of data management and get them into making the decisions, because that's the really important part, and then learning from these decisions. And that brings me neatly to this sort of penultimate bit, really, which is about education. There are, in professional wargamers, they start with, if they're an educational purpose, they'll have learning objectives at the beginning. And what we're trying to do is encourage an active reading of history. And by that, I mean, we don't passively read a history book and go, well, that was an interesting outcome, poor them. We actually ourselves, perhaps in reading through or wargaming through, we stop the historical clock. And we then refight those decisions ourselves. We come up with our own decisions and compare them with the historical version. And why do I like historical games? Well, I am prejudiced. I am an historian by background. But I think the lovely thing is about historical scenarios is that all the data sets are there. We know what actually happened. And we have the opportunity of using the full range of data and blending both machinery, which can capture that data for us, and the human decision maker. So I'm a great fan of the educational purpose. And I think if you bring these two together, scientific and educational wargaming together, which I think is the future, what we have ahead of us is an exciting future of enhanced wargaming, which gives us more time for the thinking, questioning, and deciding, and less time lost on game mechanics, consulting rules, rolling dice, and so on. So that's where we're going. And I think, you know, if I've done nothing else, I'm hoping I've persuaded you that strategy is decision making, and it's about communications, nodes, and networks. And that is precisely, fortunately, what wargaming is. So let me draw this to an end now with this thought, that I've tried to suggest that there are essentially two aspects to professional wargaming. There's the strategy and decision bit, and there's the important elements of wargaming, which come in the threes: the analytical, the scientific, and the educational. Our wargames need not be limited to operations. I think strategic games are cheap and fast, and they're much faster and cheaper than the way we have to do it for real. They can really enhance the experience of senior responsibility and scale for those who are a lot lower down the food chain of rank and structure. But it does require us as professionals, and that's you, to consider resources now in the future, what's going to be available to you, the constraints, the human constraints, the opportunities the new technologies offer, the levels of human resolve. You know, not all people are the same, as we found out between Afghanistan and Ukraine just recently. There's prevailing conditions and events to take into consideration as well when we design these things. And of course, it might reveal to us the views of our allies and partners, which are different from our own here in the UK. But scientifically, new tools can really help. And I think war games ultimately help us from the educational point of view to gain experience as an active form of learning, study, practice, reflection, and application. And I think it reveals, I think, where we are today in 2022, that we need a modern, blended approach of AI enablement and human decisions. And I think the old veterans, the old grognards, I hope, here on this call, will send us on our way with their approval, because it may give us this medium of wargaming the strategic advantage we need for much larger massed enemies that we will undoubtedly face in the next few years. Thanks so much.